This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
I would say, like, individually, as I'm thinking about this playoff series the Rockets just lost, like, individually, Seth, you've been covering this Rockets team for a good long time, just like I have, since back in the early 2010s, late 2000 and nothings. This is probably the most discussed individual playoff series that, like, non-James Harden. Like, James Harden was the topic of every playoff series going back to the time he got here. Like, Jalen Green's performance in this series as an individual is probably the one that has been touched on the most in the 24 to 48 hours after the series, other than any James Harden series, in probably since before James Harden got here.
So I guess, I mean, it's hard because it's been so long since the Rockets were
there was a playoff series that didn't involve.
It's almost like Jalen Green is the most discussed player after, other than James Harden. Jalen Green is the most discussed player after a playoff series than in any time during the James Harden era. There are a lot of similar aspects to it in terms of, okay, is James Harden simply not a great playoff performer? He was at very least a viable and very productive in the early parts of series.
Yeah.
He just tended not to be all that great in elimination games and what have you versus the really good teams. So this is a first round series where a guy that you're hoping at one point is going to develop into the alpha star on your team is the guy who played most poorly, at least according to expectations or hopeful expectations, 100%. It's a lesser version of the James Harden discussion.
Well, and there was never any discussion, and we're going to talk about this now. Like, there was never any discussion after any of those series of moving on from James Harden. Do you trade him for so and so? Do you mix him into a deal? Like, this is kind of a different deal now with Jalen Green, because this is a team that probably needs to make a move, and it might involve moving Jalen Green out. You know who
might be in the running for that is Dwight Howard in the playoffs. Because, I mean, Dwight Howard, remember, would insist. Dwight always wanted to somehow prove Barkley and Shaq wrong. And remember, they would waste possessions in the first quarter getting Dwight Howard touches in the post to where he would ineffectively try to back people up and not score points.
Yep.
So there was that element of, okay, Dwight Howard in the playoffs, Can he ultimately actually do what you want? And it always felt like you were left wanting more.
Jalen Green took his performance pretty hard. This was Jalen Green with the media after Game 7 on Sunday night.
How would you assess your overall series? And, you know, is there anything that any of the guys said to you tonight?
Besides that one game, I got to be better. First playoffs isn't an excuse. I just gotta be better.
Anything in particular?
Just being aggressive. I can't let a team take me out of the game. No matter what the scheme is, I gotta continue to go out there, be myself. And I just didn't do that.
I desperately need somebody to get with Jalen Green.
Speak up.
Just get him to put some bass in his voice, man. It makes it that much worse.
Would that guy scare you if you were the Golden State Warriors?
I can't. It's all Draymond can do. Okay. All Draymond can do is talk. And also scare Shangoon.
The reason there was a 3 second long beep there is he dropped 3 S-bombs on himself.
Yeah.
Voice aside, like Jalen is taking this seriously and he's taking it pretty hard. But he was abjectly terrible in this series. They took him completely out of this series. Now, he does have a teammate taking up for him, and he's got his coach taking up for him. So, Seth, I'm going to play these, and you tell me if you see these. Yeah. I don't want to say making excuses, but just reasons or optimism or whatever it may be, if these are valid. This is Fred VanVleet on the struggles of Jalen Green in that playoff series.
It's different, right? But, I mean, I can share with him what I've seen and what I've been through. And, again, it's the weight of the world seems to be on his shoulders at times with everybody else's expectations. But, I mean, he played well. He played team basketball. It wasn't – we were a balanced group all year. It never really was about one guy all season. So we knew that they were going to load up on him. They did it. We played them 12 times, I think, this year. So they kind of played them the same way every game. But again, as on the path to greatness, there's going to be stumbles and shortcomings and failures. And when you don't win a championship, it feels like failure. And you use that, you know, in your summertime as you prepare and get ready to come back a better player.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think that's, again, where if he weren't a high draft pick and if he weren't making the money he does, you might – for one, they wouldn't be, you know, if he didn't have the talent he does, they wouldn't be loading up on him.
Yeah.
But there is that hump you got to get over when if you're genuinely an excellent NBA player, you still find ways to produce when they're loading up on you. That's the whole, I always get upset with this. I get annoyed with this when people try to make excuses for a pass rusher and say, well, he's getting double teamed a lot. Right. The really good defensive ends get double teamed all the time,
yeah.
And they find ways to produce. And he's just not there. So I don't. It's not like somebody yesterday accused me of being mad at Jalen Green. I'm not mad at Jalen Green. I'm just accepting him for what he is right now, which is he's not the alpha on this team, and he doesn't show any signs that he can actually be the alpha in the playoffs, or he didn't hear, but that I'm open to if you bring in other people that can, you know, take the focus off of him, he can at least be a viable player in the playoffs. And I think it's very clear. He did that in game two. Game seven, the thing that was so frustrating was that Fred VanVleet was the focus of attention for the Warriors. It wasn't like Jalen Green didn't have opportunities to make something happen in that game. He just didn't do it.
Yeah. He didn't make it happen. Here's Ime Udoka on Jalen Green's struggles.
You know, you have to look at it as a sign of respect the way they went after him. Obviously, a leading scorer, and their objective was to take him out of the series. And like I've said throughout the series, it's he gets the ball out of his hands and gets us the numbers and the advantage. He's done his job there, and you have to try to take advantage of opportunities and transition when we get stops and get out and run and kind of be more efficient as far as that. But, you know, when teams want to blitz you, like I said, I always say we should welcome that and kind of pick that apart. We've seen it quite a bit this year with him. And so he's improved in that area, but, you know, he didn't get a ton of shots, honestly, throughout the series or when they did guard him regularly, he had a big night, and then they went right back to what they were doing. And so, you know, it's going to sting for him as well, not having his best performance in the series. But at the same time, like I said, you got to take advantage of those numbers. And he did his job to get off the ball, and everybody could have played better tonight, obviously.
Yeah, and what he is referring to there, that was, I think, more like game five, I think, was the game where they won, and you and I came in here the next day, and we were like, you know what, Jalen Green only scored 11 points, but he kind of did his job. He kind of, you know, he wasn't doing negative things. When he got doubled, he was getting the ball to open people, and he was facilitating things more. It wasn't that way in Game 7, nor throughout most of the series, if we're being honest. Here's the thing that I see, Seth, a lot with people, the people taking up for Jalen Green or making a case for hanging on to Jalen Green, trying to make a case that he's one of the untouchable young players like Amen Thompson and maybe to a lot of people, Upper and Shingun as well, is that they point to things like Kobe Bryant in 1997, where he shot four air balls against the Utah Jazz. Yeah. And what I would point out was Kobe's rookie year for a guy coming out of high school. Jalen's 23 now, or 22, whatever. He's four seasons in. So that analogy doesn't hold a ton of water with me. And, you know, an 18-year-old kid, skinny kid out of Lower Merion, Pennsylvania still. He's a year removed from high school, and he's shooting air balls in the playoffs versus a guy who's been in the league 4 years. Here's the other thing. Like, I see people bring up Devin Booker. Like, Devin Booker scored a bunch of points on some bad Suns teams. Good thing they stuck with him, because now he's one of the best two guards in the league. Fair enough. The difference with teams like the Suns with Devin Booker, the Lakers with Kobe. Like, the Lakers were never moving on from Kobe. It's a straw man argument. The Rockets have options. Most teams that have young guys that are going through struggles early, that get to the postseason, they are on teams where this is the only path to the rebuild, is to marry your young lottery picks that you got, stick with them, and then hope that they play their way into being very good playoff players. Rockets are the rare team, the rare contender, soon to be contender, I guess. Hard to call them a contender when they got knocked out in the first round, but I think everybody sees the makings of a contender on this team. They got a ton of options as to what they can do to improve this basketball team. And Jalen Green's just not a good enough player to stand in the way of that if he's part of facilitating that. There's very few teams that are making their run into the playoffs for the first time with a young nucleus that are doing so with five very attractive young assets on the team, a bunch of first-round picks, hell, a lottery pick that's going to get lotterized next Monday and find out exactly where it is. Like, that's the other thing I teased into this segment. Next Monday is a huge day for what the offseason is going to look like for the Rockets. If their lottery pick that they have from Phoenix, which right now is scheduled to land at 9, if the lottery just plays out the way the math says it should, it'd be 9. But if it jumps up into the top 4, like it did last year, Brooklyn's pick did for them, hell, that's all of a sudden an asset where you might not have to mix Jalen Green into a trade. Yeah. Like, that's those 5 or 6 spots in a draft, in an NBA draft, are really important, especially if it lands at number 1. Then I think you hang on to it and draft Cooper Flagg and then figure out. Then all of a sudden there's a lot of guys who aren't as untouchable as we thought they were. But this is you can't compare this Rockets team and what they have available to them to go improve the team to all these other teams that have had two guards like Jalen Green that have struggled early in their postseason careers.
I think, you know, if you look at Jalen Green in Game 5, that might be more promising than the 38-point performance in Game 2, simply because, as you pointed out, he only scored 11 points, but remember, he knocked knees and got injured in that game, and that's also right. None of the starters played more than 2.5 quarters well, until the very end. So that was maybe the one that showed the guy that could handle how they were playing him. He became a facilitator. He made smart decisions. That was really good. So if you can build on that, perhaps there you have it. I mean, just by way of illustration, though, like, people, you got to remember, this is maybe unfair because it's Steph Curry, but the finals where Iguodala won the MVP instead of Steph Curry, because remember, Steph Curry was limited in those finals. The lowest point totals he had in those 6 games was 19 points. It wasn't like Steph Curry. Yes, the Cavs really focused on Steph Curry and tried to limit him, and he never went off. Iguodala wins the MVP. Steph Curry was still scoring 20-plus in 5 of the 6 games in that season. You can't make excuses for a guy who's supposed to be an alpha by saying, well, they paid attention to him.
Well, and you know, like, if Steph's scoring 20, there's at least 3 points in the game that he's making a shot where you're like, oh crap. You know what I mean? Like, he's making, it's like his 20 points, there's by the nature of how he scores his points, there's always going to be at least 2 or 3 buckets in a game that just break your back for the next 2 minutes. You did everything right, and he's chunking up one from 30, and it comes at these really crucial times of the game. So you're absolutely right. Like, there's a difference between being contained and being completely shut down. And I think what you're describing with Steph Curry there, Seth, is, they were able to contain him. He still did some things. I mean, throughout the majority of the series, Jalen Green was a zero in this series.
Well, and the other big thing was that Steph Curry in those games was getting 7-8 assists, per game. And, you know, Jalen Green, his high was 6 assists in Game 2. There were times where he had 1 assist in some of those games.
He's gotten better at it, but he's not a distributor, man. Like, he's a guy who's, looking to hunt first. So Jalen Green, that is going to be a major topic. Fred VanVleet, they've got to make decisions on Fred VanVleet and his contract within the next several days. So this is going to be a busy week for the Rockets, even out of the postseason with the lottery next Monday. This is going to be, if you're keeping an eye on the Rockets offseason, this is a big 5 or 6 days coming up. Text message, for a team near the competitive balance tax, the Astros have a team of guys that I look around and wonder, where's all the money going? Well, 30 million of it, or near 30 million of, or well, 30 million of it's going to Jose Abreu. So there's 30. And then they're still eating a big chunk of the Rafael Montero deal. You know, there's Christian Javier's getting $12 million to rehab an injury. Like, yeah, that's there is 50 or 60 million on this payroll right now with the Astros that they are getting zero out of right now.
At least Lance's salary is actually counting towards actual baseball
that
for the first time.
That is a positive
in a long
thing. Yes.
Huzzah.
Text message, Jordan is a young 68-year-old, always a young 50, young 58-year-old, always hurt, best days behind him. I don't think best days are behind him. I think this is just something that you have to deal with every year. These injuries are a big part of the reason probably why he went and signed that deal that looks so friendly when he's got 1,000 OPS. When he's got 1,000 OPS, that deal looks like the greatest deal in baseball. When he's got an inflamed hand and he's missing 3 weeks for an oblique, you go, okay, well, that's why he's only going to make $20 million a year for the next 3 or 4 years.
The other thing that makes everything miserable right now is that, yes, the Astros are one of the worst hitting teams in baseball in a lot of regards, but it's also in a year where offense is down in general in Major League Baseball, so it feels even worse. It's such a in comparison, there's still no excuse. You're still one of the worst but you're one of the worst hitting leagues in a year where the strike zone has shrunk and it feels bad.
It feels really bad
compared to what you're used to seeing on the base.
You're among the worst in a year where the league is really bad at what we're talking about as a whole, you know? It's bad. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Let's do some headlines. We actually have a good headline for the Rockets that we'll get to. Well, could have been better, but it's all right. Astros, we'll get to that. Big news in the NFL, a release in the NFL of a future Hall of Famer possibly.
We'll get
we'll get to all that in headlines coming up next.